South Sudan's historic independence was celebrated around the world, a triumph for global justice and a signal that one of the world's most devastating wars was finally over. The new republic's birth was acclaimed not only by its long-oppressed people, but by three U.S. presidents and the legions of Americans who championed their cause. But the party would not last long. South Sudan's freedom fighters soon plunged their new nation back into chaos, shattering the promise of liberation and exposing the hubris of their American backers. Zach Verton is a writer, foreign policy analyst, and former diplomat, and writes about Sudan in his new book, A Rope from the Sky, The Making and Unmaking of the World's Newest State. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Zach Verton to the roundtable this morning. Zach, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. Delighted to be here, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Give us a sense of how you came to this particular project, and in looking at the, as the subtitle suggests, the making and unmaking of the world's newest state.
Sure. So I had lived and worked in South Sudan on and off for the better part of the last decade, first as a political analyst for a non-governmental organization living in South Sudan, and later as a diplomat during the Obama administration. And so I spent quite a good deal of time there traveling all over this world's newest country, spending time with the political elites, but also with the everyman. And for me, it's a fascinating story. You know, Sudan is a faraway place for many people, but one that still registers widely in popular consciousness, I think. People know of Darfur and the popular West End campaign to intervene there, or they know of George Clooney's activism, or many know of the Lost Boys, the refugee children who escaped war and famine and came to resettle in towns all across the United States and Canada. But most people don't know the extraordinary story that split Africa's largest country in two, the story that gave birth to the Republic of South Sudan. And to me, it's a really incredible roller coaster of a story, from a long liberation struggle to its euphoric birth 8 years ago, and sadly, its tragic collapse shortly thereafter. Really little known is the extraordinary impact of a coalition of Westerners that mobilized on their behalf, a coalition that included American politicians from right and left, activists and ideologues, Christian conservatives, and Hollywood celebrities. So it's really a really fascinating, rich story, first about South Sudan, but second also about the role of the United States.
What, for you in telling the story, where was the place to start?
I think a lot of people look at South Sudan and focus on 2011 when it was born, and they look at the civil war that started 2 years later in 2013, and people are really stunned at what happened, given South Sudan had ample oil revenues and it had an extraordinary reservoir of international goodwill. Really, the slate was clean and the future was theirs for the taking. And when it fell apart, people wondered what went wrong, and they looked to the previous years or to independence or to before that. And I think the story needs to start much earlier. And so part of this book is a political autopsy and goes back to the origins of the liberation struggle in South Sudan, and particularly the birth of the liberation movement, the SPLM, and really the dynamics that helped build that movement and ultimately sort of warped it. Over time, because it had such widespread support from outside the country, I argue that its leaders ultimately became more accountable, not to their own people, but to a constituency of supporters from abroad that were willing to back them, often at any price.
In that origin story, when and why did Americans become so involved in the process?
Sure. Yeah, so South Sudan, or Sudan, really suffered from Africa's worst and longest civil war. So in the late 1980s and 1990s, a series of American constituencies get involved in the struggle in supporting the liberation in South Sudan. And it was a really devastating war and a really righteous cause in many ways. And so members of Congress from right and left, as I mentioned, churches across the United States, Christian conservatives, the Congressional Black Caucus, later advocacy and human rights groups involved, and ultimately it includes three American presidencies, starting with Clinton and Bush and Obama. And they helped deliver aid to the South Sudan. They help ultimately support the negotiation that ends Sudan's war, and they help secure its ultimate prize of independence in 2011. But I think throughout this story, the role of the West also warrants critical reflection. And so while it delivered huge dividends for the South Sudanese people, in many ways, that constituency, the supporters, supported the underdog's cause, leaned on the scales in their favor, but ultimately moved on too soon. And so this book attempts to unpack also where those foreign supporters went wrong and helped contribute to the unraveling that we witnessed in South Sudan, and which continues right up to today.
So let's touch on that for a moment when it comes to what we were doing there and where we failed. So a lot of this has to do with the limits of American power, right? Of what we think we can do and what we actually can do.
In some ways, yes, I think that's right. It's South Sudan and Sudan was really a unique case for American foreign policy, I argue in the book, because it came at this nexus of the sort of values-based foreign policy of the United States and intervening for the right reasons on behalf of a humanitarian cause. But it sat, as I said, at the nexus of that and a near total lack of strategic national interest. And so in that space, a remarkably small group of people was able to help get the United States invested and help shape American policy. And I think over time, that policy became too one-sided. We became too close to the liberation movement in South Sudan. We saw only the flaws of the other side. And I think over time, that kind of simplified narrative of the conflict and an uncritical embrace of South Sudan's leaders warped reality in both South Sudan and in Washington. And I think that's a critical piece of the puzzle when we look at South Sudan's failure. I also think it's a sentiment most of the SPLM supporters abroad have not yet embraced, and I hope the book helps shed some light on that.
Before we get too far in the story, I just want to, when we talk about the failure now, is anything that was accomplished salvageable?
I think so, but I think it depends on your time horizon, right? I remain optimistic personally, but again, I think that is a long-term project in South Sudan. I get asked this question often, well, wasn't South Sudan's independence a mistake? And I don't think so. I think there were some really problematic foundations laid, and I think those that helped realize independence moved on too soon, as I mentioned. But I don't think the South Sudanese people's desire for self-determination or the realization of their own political independent republic was a mistake. People swoop in with that criticism often and don't appreciate the alternative. And so I argue that the problem was one of expectations and of execution. So I think certainly the South Sudanese project is salvageable. It's been devastating for many of us who were involved over the last decade. But I think if you think in longer term prospects, if we start investing in the sort of in the youth in South Sudan, I think there is a potentially bright future. But it's going to be difficult in the medium term.
So when a nation is being forged basically from scratch, and you write about this quite beautifully, but give us, and horrifically, I would also add, but give us an idea of where the Sudanese people are in the middle of this, because they don't have a lot of control through the process, do they?
Well, yeah, it's a very elite-driven project at the beginning, and again, this is where I go into some of the character and nature of the movement and its leadership in its earliest days. But we have to remember, South Sudan is the most underdeveloped place on earth when it achieves independence. People think of places like that they may be more familiar with, Iraq or Afghanistan, and in many ways, those are the future. Those are far more advanced than South Sudan, a place that had You know, when I moved there, less than 50 kilometers of paved road. It had no institutions. It had no systems of government. It had no civil society. It had really no anything. It was so long neglected and so long repressed by governments in the north. And so you really are starting from scratch. And I think that's one of the challenges, right? You had an elite project. And it was always going to take time. And I think the United States and others were ultimately probably unrealistic about how long that would take. I mean, I often think about how much gets done in one term of Congress these days, right? South Sudan, between the time the war ended and when it became independent, was a period of just 6 years. I mean, that's a remarkably short time period to stand up a state. And so it was always going to be long. And I think part of the problem that is continues to be faced today is that there isn't participatory representative government. And as anywhere, that's going to take a generation or two to develop.
And even then, I mean, that's always going to be a fight. When you're fighting greed and you're fighting violence and you're fighting ultimate power, that is always going to be a fight, right?
It's totally. It's absolutely going to be a fight. And like I said, that's why I think about it in longer-term time horizons. And, the new state did suffer in many ways. It had a huge amount of oil revenue. And yet, as many other states, it suffered in many ways from the resource curse, in which a state that has more ample natural resource revenue than others sometimes suffers worse consequences. And South Sudan is a prime case of that. So whether you look at it in economic terms or in terms of social reconciliation and sort of healing the shredded fabric of South Sudanese society after so many years of ethnic division, or you look at building institutions, again, it's going to be a long-term project. I think some people make the mistake of assuming that, then South Sudan should not have been independent. And this requires a look to history. And the reality is that South Sudan was already one of the most neglected and repressed places on earth over the last 50 years, and had struggled. Its struggle for independence was not new, but really started 50 years ago. And so this was always going to be a long-term project. And again, I don't think independence itself was a mistake. I think the alternative at the time of separation would have been a new and even greater war with North Sudan, one that could well have conflagrated across the entire region. And so for those reasons, I don't think it was a mistake. But I think, again, there are lessons here to learn, both for South Sudanese and its immediate future, but also for the United States and its foreign policy going forward. And I think, sadly, we haven't paid enough attention to South Sudan as we think about our ongoing struggle or challenge with nation building in a modern era. And I think there are probably some important lessons to draw from South Sudan. And so I hope this book does some of that.
Zach Verdin is a writer, foreign policy analyst, and former diplomat. His new book, A Rope from the Sky, The Making and Unmaking of the World's Newest State. So let us talk a little bit about when we talk about what went wrong and the collapse and the chaos.
Sure.
How much of this is a reflection, not only certainly, and we can talk more about this, but certainly of what was happening on the ground in Sudan, but also a reflection of what was happening around the globe, of the global landscape that was radically and is to this day radically changing.
That's right. I think you have to start with the Sudan People's Liberation Movement. This is the military movement that sort of initiated the struggle in South Sudan and ultimately took power, as is the case with many liberation movements around the world historically. They failed in that transition. It's not an easy one, but the SPLM had a particularly unique set of circumstances. First off, it was not a democratic organization. It did not have a democratic ethos. It did not cultivate a relationship with its own population in the way that many other liberation movements did, even around the region. And ultimately, as I mentioned earlier, a handful of its really super elite became accountable to their partners in the region and to their constituencies abroad, and became increasingly detached from their own population. And I think that's what helped to ignite the power struggle that happened in 2013. So after they achieve independence, the liberation movement assumes the role of government. And rather than develop a new political platform, a new ethos, a new plan to deliver for the people of South Sudan on the many promises they'd long struggled for, there was a power struggle. There was a vacuum in place of that program, and a power struggle filled the void. And so many people think about South Sudan's civil war today as an ethnic war. And it has most definitely become an ethnic war, but we shouldn't be mistaken. This was an elite political struggle between a handful of individuals at the top of South Sudanese society. And when things came undone, there weren't the kind of political institutions in place to absorb that. And so it turned violent. And when it turned violent, these leaders turned to their old constituencies, which were their native ethnic groups. And that's really where things came undone. The wider political context, I think, is relevant here. The wider global context, as we think about state building, we have the lessons of Iraq. Around the same time, we had the lessons of Libya. And in many ways, you had an Obama administration. Many of the individuals who were involved in the beginning of South Sudan were back in the Obama administration, but had had far more items on their plate at this time. And in many ways, the United States couldn't or didn't commit the same kind of political and economic resources to see this project through. Understandably, in some ways, people saw independence as the end of the South Sudanese project when, in fact, it was the beginning.
You have articulated aspects of your optimism, and yet can we talk about nation building and our role in that when we're also right now all beating our chest and saying America first?
Yeah, great question. I don't think so. I do think we need to think hard about this and reflect on it historically. I also get asked often about, you know, what to do the United States do now? And I think people are eager, because of the situation is so devastating, to sort of rush in and do something. And that's not always the best approach. And I think we see some of that, hopefully, in the book with the conflict in Darfur. We see some of that with the conflict between Sudan's north and south. And I think really it's about affixing an appropriate lens and a time horizon. South Sudan is going to need the United States. We still are their biggest supporter in humanitarian and economic terms by a long shot. We still probably have more influence than others, but the unraveling in South Sudan did show, as you've hinted at, did show the limits of American influence. And I think that was a really uncomfortable reckoning when many people in the United States who had long supported South Sudan's cause mistakenly thought that the South Sudanese would be forever grateful and repaying the favor. And in fact, they, as one senior American diplomat said after the fact, I think we mistook interest for friendships. And that's one of the important narratives here.
And I don't want to oversimplify this, because there's nothing about the story that is simple, but if there is a roadmap and there is success somewhere in the world, whether it be here, or you mentioned Darfur or Yemen or wherever we're talking about, is it something that in some way, shape, or form can be replicated elsewhere?
Can be replicated elsewhere in terms of improving on that?
Yeah, I mean, if you have success somewhere, Is it, and I know there are a host of variables, but is it possible to then, as a world community, come together and say, okay, well, if we did it here, we can now work on these other parts of the globe?
I think cautiously. There are certainly elements, I think, which we can learn from elsewhere. For a long time, many people supported the idea of regime change in Sudan, right up and through the period of Iraq and after. And I think Iraq and later Libya shows us an important lesson about just how devastating that can be and the consequences of that kind of intervention. And so that kind of thing, I think, is perfectly applicable elsewhere, and I think you can really, there are lessons to learn there, both from Sudan and South Sudan. Beyond that, obviously, each case is unique, and I think it's important that we have some perspective. As I said, it wasn't so long ago in historical terms that our own country fought a brutal war over economy, identity, and the nature of our state. So in many ways, it's also, the future belongs to the South Sudanese. And the last chapter of the book is about this, a young gentleman named Kong, one of the characters, and his dilemma. He's a peer of mine, really, a really impressive guy. I first met in 2009, and his story is about the future and about South Sudan's role in remaking their state. And as I hinted, I think there's a generation of young men and young women, many of whom grew up in refugee camps and were educated elsewhere in the region, which was a silver lining. And a lot of them are really eager to step up, and they have energy and ideas and optimism about the future. And I think the current war has complicated the situation for many of them, but I've seen them in action. I've worked with them. I've learned from them. And it really does give me hope for South Sudan in the long run, despite all that it faces at the moment. And I think we all ought, as international partners, to think about what we can do to best support them.
I was just reflecting on the question that I asked you previously, and I think it was a clumsy way of asking something that is pretty direct, which you just partially answered, but I'll ask the abridged version, and we'll close there, which is, do you think we can learn from our mistakes?
Oh, absolutely. And I hope that this book is in some ways a small contribution to that. But in order to learn from those mistakes, we have to be willing to face them. And I think the wounds are still raw in South Sudan because it's so recent and because it's not a winning story. For a long time, South Sudan was a winning story. It was championed by multiple U.S. administrations as a U.S. foreign policy victory, and in some ways it was. But things have really obviously changed for the worst. And I think it's critically important that before we dig into the lessons, there's a readiness to look critically at this. And I think that doesn't happen as often in places like South Sudan because it isn't as strategically important. It isn't the Middle East or Russia or China. And yet, as we think about our own posture in Syria, in Yemen, in other global hotspots, we'd really be wise to sit down and think critically about places like South Sudan. And again, that's one of the reasons I decided to write the book and sort of ask South Sudanese, ask many members of the international community who were involved, their reflections on this. And I hope the book, as I said, makes a small contribution in that regard.
Zach Vertan's new book is A Rope from the Sky, The Making and Unmaking of the World's New Estate. The book is published by Pegasus. Zach, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks again. Really delighted to be with you.
A great pleasure to have you on the program. Best of luck with your work. Again, the name of the book is A Rope from the Sky, The Making and Unmaking of the World's New Estate. It's published by Pegasus. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.